The State Administration and Technology Appropriations Subcommittee will come to order. Emma, please call the roll.
Chair Bousetta Cabrera.
Here.
Vice Chair Mooney.
Here.
Ranking Member Robinson.
Here.
Representatives Arrington.
Here.
Wasabi.
Here.
Ferrero.
Here.
Edmonds. Harris.
Here.
Holcomb.
Here.
Maggard.
Here.
Maney.
Here.
Nixon excused. Persons Malika.
Here.
Steele.
Here.
Stevenson.
Here.
A quorum is present, Madam Chair.
Thank you, members, and by your presence, we have a quorum. I want to welcome everyone to the State Administration and Technology Appropriations Subcommittee. Please make sure that cell phones and other communication devices are turned off or are on silent mode. Members, this morning we have three presentations by the Department of Management Services on several topics that I believe will be of interest to each of us. First, we will receive an update on the Florida facilities pool and the key role DMS plays in the state's real estate portfolio. Second, we will receive an update on the state law enforcement radio system. DMS executed a new contract 2 years ago for a significant upgrade to the system. Our state system is utilized by all of our state law enforcement agencies and numerous local law enforcement agencies. Third, we will have an update on Florida's E911 system. I am pleased to welcome Patrick Giuseppe, Deputy Secretary for Business Operations at DMS. Mr. Giuseppe, thank you for joining us today. You're recognized to begin when ready.
Vice Chair Mooney and Ranking Member Robinson and the rest of the committee for having me here today. My name is Patrick Gillespie. I'm the Deputy Secretary of Business Operations at the Department of Management Services. I also want to introduce, I have here with me today, Tom Berger. He's the Director of our Division of Real Estate Development and Management, and Denise Adkins, who's our Director of Telecommunications. So we're going to start off with a little bit of an overview of our real estate development and management program. This program has 284.5 FTE, responsible for everything from day-to-day maintenance of 112 facilities around the state to leasing administration of more than 1,500 private sector leases, which make up about 6.1 million square feet. We also manage 6.1 million square feet of office space. And we have a diverse portfolio of types of buildings, mostly multi-tenant office buildings like the Capitol and others in the downtown area and in each major metro area around the state. We also are responsible right now for more than $900 million in building construction around the state. That's both building new buildings as well as refurbishing older buildings to make them more efficient. So as you can see here, we have buildings throughout most major metro areas in the state. A lot of people think that DMS is the only real estate manager of the state. While we are probably would be considered the state's real estate manager overall, we only manage less than 0.5% of all buildings in Florida. Most people think that we manage all of them. We really only manage a small portion. Think the state of Florida has barns, we have fire towers, we have vehicle maintenance buildings, and then state agencies own their own office buildings as well. So just wanted to give a little bit of an overview of our five-year fixed capital outlay planning. So day-to-day, our staff are responsible for making sure that light bulbs are fixed, that the systems are working on time. They work to make sure that we're extending the life of all the systems in our buildings. We do also plan. So we put together five-year needs of buildings, just like in your home, right? Your HVAC doesn't last forever. Your roof ends up leaking at some point. Same thing in our buildings. We're planning for 5 years out of what those deferred maintenance needs might be. We also plan for ADA and life safety projects. So if you think about fire alarm systems, emergency lighting, we have to make sure that those are maintained. And then Americans with Disabilities Act. We need to make sure that our buildings are accessible to the public and for our tenants. And so right now we're looking at about a $400 million five-year deferred maintenance needs list. This changes throughout the year. So as we identify new needs and as we look at when systems are gonna come to their end of their useful life, we're identifying those needs. So this is just a little bit of a snapshot of some of the major construction projects we have going on right now. And this is both in Tallahassee and throughout the state. You can see in the upper right corner, we did a groundbreaking back in December for the 2nd District Court of Appeal building in St. Petersburg. That is a courthouse that we're building on behalf of the court system. You can also see in the background of that building, that is the Sebring building, which was a building that we managed. And so what we realized is that Now, not only is there not a lot of land available to purchase in St. Petersburg, it's a very consolidated area. It was also going to be very expensive. We also recognized that the Sebring building was an underutilized building that had some ongoing maintenance needs. And so what we decided to do is repurpose that building, demolish it, and use that site for the Second District Court of Appeal. It's also a unique location because it's right around another judicial community where there's another courthouse and a police department, so we felt like it made really good sense to put the courthouse there and a good use of the resources we already had as a state. The other rendering you can see down there is what our Capitol Security Screening Center will look like. So we received funding in this current fiscal year to design and build that facility. We just selected the construction manager, so the time frame on that is still being determined. But that will be an external from the Capitol Screening Center that will provide additional tools for Capitol Police as they screen visitors, ensuring that the Capitol remains safe for the number of people that come into the building every day. And then you can see from the list here, we're working with Veterans Affairs on a couple different veterans nursing homes, working on building the State Emergency Operations Center, and then quite a few projects at the Capitol, which we'll get into here in a second. So just a status update. I think the number one question we receive is, when are the bars going to come off the windows? So just to talk a little bit about that project, the windows project has been ongoing for more than a year now. Before this session, before committee weeks, we were able to replace all the windows on the north side of the Capitol and some on the west side as well. I think if you walk on that side and you look in your offices, you can see the difference. They look very good. They are going to provide additional heating and cooling capacity for the building, make the building more efficient, and seal up all those windows. We're going to resume the project after session this year, and our goal is to be completed with that by 2025 or 2026. We've also undertaken replacing all the heating, ventilation, and cooling, the HVAC system for the entire Capitol complex. It's a major project. We were planning 4 floors to be completed last year when we kicked off. We were able to get 6 done, so that was good, and we feel really good about the progress there. Again, post-session, we'll be working on that again. And then we have a variety of other projects related to electricity redundancy, fire alarm systems, and then, of course, the Capitol Screening Center, which we talked about. On the 22nd floor, we were able to establish a davit swing stage system so that once the grates come off, once we have new windows in place, we'll be able to send swing stages down to clean those, which will make it a lot easier to maintain those. Here are a few renderings of some of the ongoing projects at the Capitol. So I'm going to talk about Waller Park in a second. You can see the little bit of a before and after of what the windows will look like once they're complete. On the left is what it looks like now, and then on the right is what they will look like. We think it'll also improve the aesthetics of the Capitol. And then below is Waller Park. So Waller Park, for those of you who are new members, have probably never experienced it. It's been under construction for a few years now. That is the what people refer to as the dolphin side of the Capitol. It's actually the main entrance of the Capitol. It's where school groups come, buses get dropped off, students are able to experience the Capitol. That is really, at its heart, an access project. That is an ADA project. As you can see on both renderings, we have installed elevators on the north and south sides of the street with bridges that come across to the upper level. And so that's going to really provide better access for people coming to the Florida Capitol. Before we started the project, there were 9 levels of stairs to get from the street level to the top. So if you had any sort of mobility issue, it was going to be very difficult for you to access the Capitol. There are structural elements to the project as well as a reimagining of the actual plaza, which will provide additional event space and gathering space. And we see that as an area where children can come with their schools and have little areas to congregate and talk about Florida government. Another one of the projects that we worked on last year, the legislature appropriated money for us to do an assessment of our downtown buildings in Tallahassee. So we assembled a team of architects and tenant brokers to look at 10 office buildings and 7 parking garages and look at what opportunities there may be for the state to sell real estate assets that it has and look at building a newer office building elsewhere in Tallahassee. So for those of you not familiar, there's a grouping of buildings in downtown Tallahassee. There's also a grouping of buildings in the Southwood part of Tallahassee called the Capitol Circle Office Center, Capitol Circle Office Complex. There are several state agencies that are established down there, and the state owns land and has ability to build office buildings down there. And so the study looked at what are areas of Tallahassee where the real estate market might support selling some older, outdated, heavy maintenance facilities and allowing the state to build new. And I just want to give a quick update on what we think is a good example of good governance that we were able to accomplish in the past year. There's a building down in Fort Lauderdale called the Gore Building. It's about 85,000 square feet, and it was really an underutilized building. Had about $8 million of maintenance needs and operations needs over about a five-year period. And so, obviously, South Florida has a very excitable real estate market, and so we knew that that building was going to be very valuable. We estimated $45 to $50 million, and happy to report that that building sold for $62.6 million that the state was able to bring in, as well as create the job opportunities for whatever that building ends up being repurposed as, and returning that building and that property to the local tax rolls. So we felt like that was a really good use of state resources. We also helped agencies relocate before we sold that building. And then I just wanted to touch on some of the Framework for Freedom budget items that are real estate related in the budget. I know you had the presentation last week, but we've got $6 million for a new office building, $6 million for a new 6th District Court of Appeal, $10 million for building acquisition. That is really to provide us some agility in the real estate market. Right now, without appropriation, without cabinet approval, we really aren't able to get in the real estate space if we identify office space that could be advantageous for the state to own. And so we believe that that's a number that will allow us to have some flexibility. About $8.9 million for maintenance and repair. That includes the ADA and life safety projects. And then about $1 million, we've got a conforming bill language to update the definition of the Capitol complex and put aside space specifically for monuments and memorials as they are passed by the legislature. And with that, I will take any questions.
Members, any questions for the first presentation? All right. Thank you, Mr. Giuseppe, if you want to continue on to the second presentation.
So the next presentation will be on the Florida Statewide Law Enforcement Radio System, also known as SLRS. Government never wastes an opportunity to use an acronym, so we call that SLRS. This is a mission-critical communication system used by all state law enforcement. As you can see here, transmits about 810,000 radio transmissions a day. There's about 26,000 radios on the system. And the system, interestingly enough, covers 25 miles offshore and 5,000 feet in the air. And so this is a system that's used by Highway Patrol, FWC, FDLE, all state law enforcement entities, as well as some local partners, and we'll talk about that in a minute. So as the prior slide showed, there are 219 towers on the system, at least one in every county throughout the state. And you can see the spread that allows us to have coverage all throughout the state. Here is a list just of our partners. We have federal partners, other local entities, and then others that have a law enforcement component. Some of these entities use the system as their primary communication system. Others just want to have that connectivity to other state agencies, so it provides some additional coordination capability. A little bit of history on the system. So in the 21-22 fiscal year, session 21, the legislature and the GAA directed the agency to sign a 15-year contract extension with the current provider, which is L3Harris. Also appropriated funds to upgrade the system to what's called Project 25 Phase 2. It's the latest standard and greatest standard for mission-critical communication. That's going to do quite a few things for the state. It's going to increase our interoperability. It's able to talk to disparate systems. It's going to increase our uptime and availability. It's going to increase our coverage. So those are all very good things for first responders. We're also provided money to replace old radios for state agencies. And it also assigned the tower leases, the private tower leases, to the department to manage. In the current fiscal year, you can see there's a split between trust fund and general revenue. The trust fund is made up of fees related to non-criminal traffic violations as well as criminal fees. Those help fund day-to-day operations for the staff as well as the contract payment. And then there's general revenue, which also goes to some networking and tower leases. In the Framework for Freedom budget, also split trust fund and general revenue for the same purpose. We've identified several towers on the system that are having some structural issues, and then there are others that are tied into disputes with landowners. And so we have we've requested and received in the current fiscal year and in the next fiscal year, looking for some funding to help us to shore up our towers throughout the state. Also worth noting, we are looking at strategic partnerships with local governments who own towers so that we can share space and put our SLRS equipment on those towers as well. I wanted to end this presentation with a little bit of an update on where we are with upgrading the system. So we've distributed about 95% of all of the radios. The remainder, the small portion remainder, were related to some supply chain issues and then some testing that we needed to do to make sure that those radios were working correctly. And those are what are called handheld controllers. Those are radios that are typically used in undercover vehicles. So in most patrol vehicles, you've got a visible radio that's out there in the console. For undercover vehicles, it's under the seat, and it's a little bit different technology. So we required some additional testing on those, and we believe they'll be fully installed in the next few months. And the upgrades of antennas and microwave systems is ongoing. I do want to point out, we do have a very collaborative process going on between DMS, our vendor L3Harris, state and local law enforcement. Everyone's working together to move this project forward. We've started in the Miami region, and we're moving north and west throughout the state to upgrade the system. Right now, we believe that we'll be done with that by the end of 2024. So with that, I will take any questions.
Members, any questions on the SLRS system? Representative Maney, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Really, it's a three-part question, and I think the answers are probably obvious, but I want to make sure I get the answers. Do the state towers lease any of their usage for commercial cell transmission? Second, does the state lease any of those for commercial use? Is there any Chinese technology that's used on any of these towers? And finally, I'm from Okaloosa County. We have an old tower, as you may or may not know, right downtown in the center of town. What's the process if somebody wants to move a tower?
Mr. Gillespie, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the question, Representative. So our state towers and typical cell towers are a little bit different. So a cell tower you might see throughout your community might be about 100 feet. Our towers are typically 300 feet because they broadcast in a further direction. I don't know the answer, but I can certainly get back to you on whether any of our towers that the state owns has other carriers on them or other equipment on them. And generally from our experience, moving a tower is very expensive. Obviously, they're very large, and if they're in bad shape, it could create further damage. Generally, towers can cost $1 to $2 million to build new. There are some situations where we're attempting to repair towers. There are other situations where it makes more sense to build in a new location and make sure that they are engineered to continue to provide the coverage that's necessary.
Representative Maney, follow up.
Would you get back with me or have somebody get back with me both about the Crestview Tower and Chinese technology?
Yes, absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Stevenson, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the presentation on the SLRS system. Isn't there a pretty rigid requirement for how stormworthy the towers are so that they're up during an emergency event?
Mr. Gillespie.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the question. Yes, there are standards to make sure that the towers are able to withstand storms, and we've been very fortunate that through the last 20 years, I don't believe that we've ever lost a tower. We've certainly had equipment damaged, but have never actually lost a tower. They do erode over time, as with anything else, and so it's certainly important for us to make repairs on the towers that the state owns. Obviously, when there are privately owned towers, we're relying on a private vendor to make sure that those are maintained.
Representative Stevenson, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I really appreciate this update. because this was a significant upgrade in radios, and we had some obstacles that needed to be overcome to improve the entire system. So I appreciate the hard work that's gone into this. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Members, any further questions? Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Gillespie. You're recognized to go on to the next presentation.
Thank you, Chair. So our last presentation this morning will be on the Florida's E911 program. This is another program that's managed by our Division of Telecommunications. Just for a brief overview, there are more than 200 public safety answering points throughout the state. So that is the call center that if you call 911, where that call is coming into, more than 5,000 call takers around the state are receiving that information to dispatch out first responders to provide assistance. Our department helps assist and staffs the E911 board, which administers the E911 grant program. So just for some definitions, as I refer to them later in the presentation, E911 is kind of your legacy traditional 911 system. You call in, you provide information to a call taker, and then they dispatch out help. NG911, which is next generation 911, this is a more advanced system, which can provide the ability to provide text, data, audio, images, video. It's set up over a private IP data network. So not only does that provide call takers with more information that they can provide to first responders, but it also allows for seamless transition and transfer of calls between different jurisdictions. And so that's the direction that we're attempting to move as a state. And we'll get into that in a little bit. The E911 board is established by statute. There are 11 members. Five of them are 911 coordinators, small, medium, large counties, and then two at large. Three local exchange carriers, which would be your traditional landline companies, two wireless carriers, and then one system director, which would be our staff that manages the board. The board is responsible for administering and disbursing funds that are acquired from 911 fees, and we'll get into the source of those in a minute. There is an automatic disbursement that goes through automatically to counties, so the money that comes in from these fees goes directly to counties on a monthly basis, and then there are several grant cycles to provide additional assistance. So in 2022, those fees brought in $135 million. The vast majority comes from wireless, so if you have a cell phone, you have a traditional plan, there's a 50-cent fee that comes out every month that you pay. And it goes directly into the trust fund. If you have a landline, a non-wireless phone, there's also a fee. And then if you have a prepaid phone, there's also a fee. And so collectively, those revenues add up pretty quickly with the number of phones that we have in Florida. Those fees are directly poured into the counties to provide this service. And only about 1% is used for board travel, board fees, and for our staffing of the board. To get into a little bit of the grant program, so there is a rural county grant program that is for counties of a population of 75,000 or less. And so there's additional assistance for those counties. And then there is a general state grant program, which is open to all counties. We also have an emergency grant program that is not used very often, but can be used after a natural disaster. So this is a map that's going to get into where counties are for text to 911 services. So we have the vast majority of the state already offers this service, and then there are several counties that are in progress to get to that point. This is really kind of the tip of NG911 service. This is where some additional information can be provided to call takers to get that information to first responders, and we're making great progress as a state. The next slide I'm going to get into is what's called ESINET. So that is a what we talked about earlier for NG911. That is a emergency service IP network is what ESINET stands for. And this shows where we are as a state to making progress to getting that kind of connectivity throughout the state. As I said earlier, we've got many counties are moving in that direction. Several are making progress. And so we continue to promote this with counties. We continue to provide the funding necessary. There's a lot that goes into establishing this. Not only do you have to have a secure network to provide this service, but you have to have the GIS mapping to make sure that the address that you're going to is accurate. Have to make sure that all the software and hardware that you need to make this service happen is paid for and is continued to maintain. And so we're continuing to push this with counties. We're continuing to promote it and trying to get them to push in that direction. This is a little bit of a breakdown of where we are by region. We have various stages of progress, but we believe in the next 2 years we will have a robust NG911 call taking ability across the state. We are working directly with each of these regions and each of these counties at the 911 coordinator level to accomplish the goal, because I think we all recognize that this is an important service. In the current fiscal year, you can see that our funding for the program is about $152.3 million. As I said, the vast majority of that is distribution directly to counties. And then there's a small portion that provides our salary and benefits for our team. In the coming year, you can see the recommended budget for the Framework for Freedom budget is $186 million. The big jump there is based on the revenue that we're bringing in, largely from wireless cell phones. As Florida's population grows, there are more cell phones out there. As a parent to young daughters, there are a lot of kids with cell phones now, so there's just more activity out there and more fees coming in. And so that's what the budget calls for the coming year. And with that, I'll take any questions.
Members, any questions on the E911 system? Representative Robinson, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you for the presentation. It was very enlightening. And thank you for even stopping by. I'm sorry I didn't ask this question then. I wanted to ask a question about the text to 911 call, especially in the Miami-Dade County area. I see that they're in progress. Just kind of wanted to get a little detail on, you know, where they are and why they're not there. I know it's a very large county.
Chair. Representative, or Mr. Gillespie, you're recognized.
Chair, thank you. Thank you for the question. I don't have specific details on Miami-Dade, but I can certainly get back to you with that. With large jurisdictions, there's a lot of coordination that goes on to make sure that these systems are talking and operating correctly. Obviously, with a 911 system, there's no ability to take that system down to upgrade it. So there's a lot of work that goes into it, but I can certainly get some details and get back to you if you don't mind.
Sure. Representative Edmonds, you're recognized.
Could you just go back to slide 21, please? And thank you for your presentation. So I have two questions. Is there an incentive to move to the NG911 opposed to the E911? Is that our plan to continuously prosper or go to that one?
Mr. Gillespie?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the question. So I think the real upside to NG911 is the amount of information that it can provide to first responders as they're preparing to go into a situation. At traditional 911, all you have is your voice, right? You can just provide information with your voice. NG911, you could text information. Obviously, if you need to be quiet, you're in a situation that's dangerous, texting's better than talking. You could provide images or video that could be more helpful to an officer responding to a situation. So I think the motivation is we have funding to provide these services that we're willing to and are going to be providing to counties, and it also is a better service for constituents.
Representative Edmonds.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So my thought process is, if we have a catastrophic storm, can these systems be overwhelmed? Or if there's a school shooting, could the system be overwhelmed in a situation where we have so many people trying to reach out to 911?
Mr. Gillespie.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the question. Certainly, I think as you're establishing a network, you want to make sure that you have the right capacity and you're able to scale up. Just like any sort of system, you'd be able to scale up and scale down based on call volume. So the real goal of that is to be able to make sure that you've got the strong backbone to be able to handle those calls, but believe that would be the case.
Members, any further questions? All right. Thank you, Mr. Gillespie. Thank you for your time today and your presentations.
Thank you, Chair.
Members, this concludes our agenda. Representative Edmonds moves we rise. Without objection, the meeting is adjourned.